I get my little Peloton. And my gym is over there.
You got the Michigan joint too.
Yes, sir.
That's hard.
What's this? This?
Like, yeah, that's hard, man. That's a verse. That's a salat from the Quran. Yeah. Oh,
that's awesome.
Who was that with that hot top, no face?
Are you serious? Are you serious? So this is the book I was telling y'all about. This is my The Struggle That Must Be.
I'm gonna order one.
Yeah.
I wanna check it out.
But I'm gonna give y'all a book from my guy too. And this is the guy, like, he helped me, Michael Phelps, Tom Brady. Tom Brady wrote the foreward to this joint.
You all right, Dez?
I try, brother. I try.
You know, I think it's the first time we ever got gifts at a guest house.
I'm leaving here with something.
I'm leaving. I'm from around the way.
This big ass household gonna leave me with something coming out of here.
See them little small Michigan trophies? I'm gonna put them where those Emmys were.
Is that like banquets on the team and stuff like that?
Yeah. Exactly. Damn.
You was a bad man.
Oh, Dez was killing it, bro. Yeah, Dez was killing it with elbow pads on.
Exactly.
You know you gotta be good.
You know you gotta be good.
I had them pads in high school.
Yeah, exactly.
No, you out there, Jerome Bettis's on?
Yeah. Hey, them thick ones.
Hold up. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On the mission got me up. Knowing me, I got the key. Only vision I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Take a stomach cap, pinning it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling got me up. On the mission got me up. Knowing me, I got the key.
Yeah. So what you naysayers want to talk about today, huh?
My naysayers.
Come to visit the brother.
Yeah, man. We appreciate it, bro.
Yeah.
When he said link in the beginning, yeah. I was like, okay, I don't even know what that means.
Right.
When he said I was like, ain't no way.
come on, Reese. Hey, come on,
give
Reese.
It to us, Reese.
Come on, Reese.
Hey. Oh, man. Well, yeah, Dez, man, thank you so much for allowing us in your home. It's beautiful. We appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
This is Chan, Freddie T. I'm RC. Welcome to The Pivot. Man, it's an honor, you know, sit down with Heisman Trophy winner,
yes,
Super Bowl MVP, yes, one of the best doing it on TV.
Appreciate
and
it.
What I've learned over time, just a good dude.
Appreciate that.
Right, always appreciate the same every time I see you. You know, we got to meet your beautiful wife and the kids aren't here right now, but it does sort of bring me to my first question.
Okay.
In a story about you winning the Heisman, you talked about what you got from your mother, Hattie, and also from your father, JD.
Correct.
And the different things they instilled in you.
Yes.
But you also said, just because you come from a home that's been fractured,
correct,
it doesn't mean you have to become a juvenile delinquent.
Absolutely.
Talk a little bit about your parents and their story and how those things helped form who you are now.
Whew, man, I tell you what, it's a lot to unpack because I'm one of four boys, right? So my mom had four boys, and so my parents divorced. It was just me and my dad. So my three brothers, they decided to stay home because my mom got the house and live with my dad. I mean, my mom. I moved out with my dad, and we didn't have much. We like moved in with his mother, and we were like just in the car, you know. And eventually he found an apartment, and so it was rough for us for a minute, you know what I mean? But, I mean, we had each other, and, you know, my parents, they always, even my mom, she, you know, always instilled in us as young men to be hard workers, you know what I mean? I came up in the era where my mom worked and my dad worked. My mom worked at the house, and my dad worked at a manufacturing plant, and it was tough work. But it was an era where unless you were like on your way to the hospital, you didn't call them at work. Or you didn't bother them at work. You know what I mean? Because work was just that serious. So I always took whatever I did that serious, if it makes sense, you know? And that transferred to sports.
Yeah.
It transferred to academics because I was also in an era where if you didn't have the grades, you wasn't going to play sports. Mm-hmm. That's just how my parents raised us. So I had to be, you know, I guess what you would call academically eligible, even in elementary school, you know, because they just didn't play that. And so, I lived in Cleveland and it was rough, you know what I mean? Like, I got two older brothers. My youngest brother, he was not a problem. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's ever had a fist fight in his life, which still blows our mind when we talk about it. Now, me and my other brothers, you know, we would get down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, it was a rough area. And, you know, we had to navigate the streets and do what we did, but playing sports kept me out of the streets. Mm-hmm. Really helped me a lot. And then I had good coaches, but it's that foundation that my mom and my dad instilled in me as far as like hard work, sacrifice that I was able to carry with me. Shoot, I mean, most of my life. The crazy thing is, and we'll talk about it probably later, I never knew it was different, like I was different. You know what I mean? Because this is just how I was cut, and this is how I was raised. So I never knew that I was different.
But Dez, what would make you go with your father if the other boys wanted to stay at the house with your mom?
That's a great question, RC. I just felt a connection with my dad. You know, I always wanted to be with my dad. And yeah, man, we were just close. And it's not like I didn't love my mother, because I love my mother. And man, I just saw my mother just this past weekend. It was a surprise for her. She lives with my brother in Texas, and he drove her up to Houston and surprised her with me. I knew they were coming. And I surprised my sons with her, because my sons are with me. They didn't know they were going to see their grandmother.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was, bro. It's like, I was like, this trip is fantastic. You know what I mean? Just that part right there made it worth the while.
So nothing anyway, to do with Michigan winning the championship, huh?
Yeah, well, that was the icing on the cake. Hey, that was going to be like, well, you know, I'm like, wifey, I know Michigan can get it done. But listen, the boys got a chance to see grandma. So it's all good, yeah, you know?
Yeah, what was that conversation like, though? With your mom, the decision, like, my mom and dad got divorced, I was 10.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just moving to Atlanta. There was no option for me.
Right, right, right.
But then to look at you, like you said, you love your mom to death, but yeah, to look at your mom and say, I'm going with dad.
Yeah, I think my mom knew that my dad and I were really close. You know what I mean? And hell, I mean, she getting three. You know what I mean? Can he have one? Yeah. So I think, you know what I mean? She understood it, you know, that the closeness that we had, and that I was like, that's who I wanted to be with, you know what I mean? And I didn't want my dad to be alone. I didn't want to be without him. You know, we were really, really tight. And then obviously, like I said, we struggled. We used to live in the projects with his mom, and we talking like projects. Like, you know, we play the game with the roaches, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you turn the light on, they run, you turn it back off, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, but that was my guy. And, you know, we toughed it out together. And, yeah, you know, I got a lot of stories about my dad.
He like Minji Stew. Shannon said, well, his parents got divorced.
Yeah.
They had, you know how the infomercial would come on,
yeah,
that for a cup of coffee, you could pay for whatever for, you know, a kid in Ethiopia,
oh, yeah, yeah,
or Africa,
yeah, yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
support the kid in Africa.
Right, right, right.
And yeah, we had a brother named Minji Stew. And we were sending this, $11 a week, whatever it was, to support him. And then once my mom and dad got divorced,
yeah,
that little picture stayed at the daddy house.
Yeah.
And we ain't have Minji no more. I didn't know what happened to Minji. I said, damn, Minji. So yeah, you snuck off with Minji.
Yeah, man.
At least mom was able to get three. I think in my house, I have four boys.
Okay.
And I think they would all want to come with me because my wife, she don't play.
Oh, really?
She does not mess around.
She's a disciplinarian?
She don't fuck around.
Ooh wee, that's what I'm talking about.
They want to jump in. They would definitely want to come with me.
Yeah, yeah.
But go back to your upbringing, because like you said, football allowed you to stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
Was it really that bad in Cleveland?
Man.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I was born in the 70s, you know what I'm saying? So we're talking about the 70s, the 80s. You're talking about, like, I went through, like, the thickest part of, like, the gang warfare, so to speak. The crack epidemic, you know what I mean? Like, when it was at its height, they're talking about 70s, 80s, 90s. So I'm like, I tell my son's stories now, and they're so funny. Like, they like, them dudes, they like to hear the war stories, you know what I mean? I mean, my oldest brother, Jonathan, was in the Air Force for 25 years. So I went to go visit him when I was in high school out in California. So long story short, I ended up fighting these grown men on the Air Force base, right? Like, we getting it in. So my sons, like I told you, my brother just drove my mother up to Houston to visit with us, right? So we at dinner, I promise you. First question my son asked my brother, Uncle Jonathan, so did dad have a fight on the Air Force base? He said, yup. He said, yeah, he putting in work too. I said, that's gonna be the first question you're gonna ask my brother. You know what I mean? You got your grandma here. So yeah, we used to get it in. And it was like, you know, like, you know, gunplay and everything, you know? It was rough. But because I played baseball, football, basketball, I ran track, it kept me out of a lot of it. But you can't totally avoid it. And what it did, RC and Channing and Fred, man, it puts you in a mindset, right? Because it's a mindset of survival. Mm. And that's every time you walk out that door, you know what I mean? Even if you just go into practice, I think it's what made me who I am today. Like, I wouldn't change a thing because it gave me the character and the awareness that I have today, no matter where I am. So I'm comfortable. Like, if you see me out, like, I move by myself a lot, you know what I mean? Because I'm very comfortable with that, because I have, like, an awareness and everything and a confidence to handle different situations because of my upbringing. And I was telling my son, they like to hear the war stories. I said, y'all little private school boys. And then they like to say, because I went to St. Joe's High School, we're talking about that. But dad, you like wore a shirt and tie to school? I mean, the high school? Right. We don't have to do that. We just wear like a polo shirt with a G on it. I'm like, okay. All right. He's like, yeah, we the same. I'm like, no, son, we not the same. Yeah.
But you know what, that's the thing. You've had all of these experiences, you know, because of the way you were raised and because of the hard work, where they see dad smiling all the time. They don't know what it was like then. You know, the things you did have to go through or live through.
Yeah.
I do. You're from Ohio, right?
Born and raised.
Two Heisman Trophy winners from the University of Michigan, who are running backs in Ohio in high school. You and Charles Woodson.
Yeah, man.
But your number two school was Georgia Tech?
Yeah. Because it's an academically advanced institution. And like I said, so I took my academics very seriously when I was in all my life, but especially in high school, because, you know, I'm coming out, you know, it was like in the late 80s, right? And the whole thing was about Prop 48. Mm-hmm. And you ain't want to be a Prop 48 guy, you know what I'm saying? And so we had to like really like buckle down and make sure your academics was on point, because you ain't want to be a Prop 48 guy. And so I took my academics seriously, and then Georgia Tech is just a great academic institution. And they had a guy who coached named Chuck Prefer. So Chuck Prefer recruited me, and he was a hell of a recruiter. Another recruiter I had was Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. Nick Saban recruited me from Michigan State. Yeah, he was up there at Michigan State. So I took a trip up there to East Lansing, too. It was a great time. I went down to Atlanta.
We can't let him go to Atlanta.
Ooh, we.
You know this. We
went down to Magic City.
You leave Georgia Tech campus, go right across the highway. You know it's over there on the right.
Oh, man, exactly. Exactly, man. And went to Purdue, too. Purdue was a great academic institution, too. And Prefer was recruiting me from Purdue. But Georgia Tech, man, I went down there with Bobby Ross, and, man, they almost got me at Magic City, bro. They almost got me. I ain't gonna lie, bro.
It's crazy you say Magic City in Atlanta is like the pyramids.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just a perfect example. Thank you.
I was just in Magic City 2 weeks ago, and you talking about going there when you was coming out of high school.
You know what I mean?
Magic City got it on lock. Some of them still in there, too. There's some olds in there.
Are you serious?
Hey, babe, it's retirement time now, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think they got pension. You know what I'm saying? Ain't no severance pay from the poll, dog. Like, that don't happen like that. You mentioned, though, you know, and I guess it's a good time, Nick Saban recruited you at Michigan State.
Yeah.
And you're talking about the late 80s.
Yeah.
Right? He then goes to LSU. He's there my junior and senior year.
Yeah.
Coach Channing at Miami.
Drafted me.
For the Dolphins, you know, and then goes on to be what I feel is the greatest college football coach of all time.
Hands down.
You know,
down.
When you hear that news
that
Nick is stepping down, what's your first thought?
We just lost a great one, bro. We lost a giant, you know what I mean? And I think when you talk to Nick, you hear him talk, you hear him do interviews, you understand that the present state of college football is starting to wear on a lot of these OGs, you know what I mean? Mm. Just the changes and everything, it's just starting to wear on them. And we're losing some of our giants. And, you know, I don't think it's a great thing. You know, Tom Brady, about 2-3 weeks ago, talked about the state of the NFL. And I believe the way he criticized the state of the NFL is because of the filter, the feeding system that's coming in from college to the NFL. So this is what you're getting from this product, you know what I mean? And so if this is the feeding system and it's broken, then it's going to show eventually at the highest level in NFL. And that's what he was addressing. So I think you have a coach like Saban, like, you know, in his early 70s, we all know he can still do it.
Yeah.
But it just wears on you. And I think that's why he made that decision. I was really surprised, but I guess a lot of people said they weren't as surprised. Maybe they like paid more attention to what was going on. You know, my attention was to the Wolverines, so I wasn't paying much attention. But I guess they said there were signs, you know what I mean? And I like I said, I know him since high school. Tremendous respect for Nick, bro. Right. That's my guy. I mean, because I just like coaches like that. When I was in high school, Cleveland St. Joe's, my coach was a World War II vet, right? Mm-hmm. So he was in the military. He drilled us like that, you know, because our high school was actually on the shores of Lake Erie.
Wow.
So we had, it's like a beach, you know what I mean? And we would go out there and do those type of drills in the sand. Yeah, and so I love that because that type of discipline, like I need it and I responded to that. You know, even from when I was a little kid playing the St. Tim's, my coach is Bruce Walker and them. Same way they drilled us, you know what I mean? So it was like a continuation from Bruce Walker and St. Tim's, starting with Nate Clark and then the Gut Broad. And so, man, then Nick Saban is the same guy. Mm-hmm. Disciplinarian, want to hold you accountable, yep. But he wants you to, you know it's coming from a place of love. That's what changes everything, because he's going to get on your ass,
yes.
Right? He's going to get on your ass. But you know it's coming from a place of love, so you accept it. And then you see the results.
Yeah.
So once you start to see those results, you become more accepting of that type of coaching. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of coaching I came up under. And so I respect that. People get all kind of in their feelings if somebody yell at a guy now, and what do you want him to do? But I tell you what, and man, listen. One of the greatest quotes I ever heard was from Joe Dumars. Joe Dumars was front office with the Detroit Pistons at this point. He wasn't a player, and we talked. He said, Desmond, there's never been a superstar that was coddled to greatness.
Wow.
I said, damn, Joe, you know what? That's fact, you know what I'm saying? And I always think about that. Like, you can't coddle somebody to greatness.
There gotta be some fire to sharpen that sword.
You already know,
yeah,
100%.
I love that.
Yeah, I think your points are perfect when you talk about the feeding system, college football, the state of college football, those kids being coddled, all that different stuff. But going back to Nick real quick, it surprised me the most because I thought he would at least try to get to 300 wins.
Yeah.
He's right at 292, so I was like, that was a bit surprising, just really tracking that. But other than that, man, he recruited me to Michigan State, too.
Yeah.
I went to Michigan State. Too cold for a Florida boy, though. So I ended up going to UF. My run-ins with Nick, man, very respectful, like you said, disciplinarian.
Yeah.
And he reminded me of when I went to New England with Belichick and the Pats and just buying in. That same disciplinarian wants you to come in with a sense of urgency and just being a pro,
right. Understanding
the game.
Exactly.
And going back to the feeder system, these kids, they don't always have that. Like, they don't have that tough skin, a lot of them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I think the wear and tear is one thing that Nick certainly wants to avoid, because those kids, they come in with entitlement. They leave college football and go to the pros, millions in their pocket. Mm-hmm. With a fuck you attitude.
Yeah.
Now these coaches got to deal with them.
Right.
I think Bill want to hit the gate, too, and be done with that. He don't want to deal with that. Who wants to deal with that?
100%.
So, I agree with you on it.
It's also, too, though, it's that they are now being compared to the younger coaches who are used or who grew up in this era of player,
mm-hmm.
right? Nick grew up recruiting you. Nick grew up recruiting you. He grew up coaching me.
Yep.
He also had Channing at one point.
Yeah.
Can't be 100%.
Why you say it like that?
You know why, man. You know why.
He didn't even look at me. He's on hand.
Hey, we're just saying, like, three guys who was like, hey, we really want to work, and then the guy that...
Damn, man.
That
Coach gonna smell that Hennessy on Tuesday.
Yeah, you got, like, a Nick Saban story?
Oh, I got a bunch of them, but...
Oh, really?
I think, honestly, that Nick Saban, to your point, that disciplinarian, to both of y'all, I think that shit's dead.
Yeah.
Kids ain't dealing with that. Nick Saban didn't call... 2 years, 05, 06, he coached me. He never said my first or last name.
Really?
He called me Gator. And he made it perfectly clear that LSU was 12-1. What year was that?
04, when they won the national championship. They were 12-1, and Florida went to Baton Rouge and beat them up there.
Right.
And he told me when I got there, he was like, I drafted you because you balled out in that game.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
flat out told me and called me Gator for 2 years. It was, and it's crazy because he is a genius defensive mind.
Right, right.
But he came up to me during the game, during the halftime. This is an NFL game. I'm a grown-ass man, Dez.
Yeah.
I'm a millionaire.
Right.
Hey, they don't fucking respect you. So they're going to get in 2x2. They're going to go to trips. They're going to throw a screen on the backside first, third down, because they don't fucking think you can cover anybody. Okay? If you make the tackle, we're going to get off the field. That's what's going to happen. And so I'm in my feelings now, Dez. I'm like, oh, what the fuck you talking to me like this?
Yeah.
Swear to God, first, third down. 2x2, run the trip. I look in the backfield, the back looking at the ground and peeking. I said, this motherfucker about to run the screen. I just walk, bro, I walk up in the B gap.
Yeah.
Swim the guard, go make a tackle for loss.
Yeah.
And he look at me, and it's not like, yeah, good job, crowd is.
It's that easy.
Motherfucker, I just told you what was gonna happen. But I don't think, to Freddie's point, I don't think these kids nowadays, I coach in high school too. Okay. I don't think these kids nowadays are gonna be able to deal with that. That's that Parcells tree.
Yeah.
That tree, I think these kids nowadays need that Mike McDaniel, that Shanahan, that McVay, that younger, vibrant, we're friends, I'm not a dictator situation. Yeah. I don't know if there's a, if the coach, the coaching style of the Sabins and the Parcells and them, I don't know if it can go nowadays, this day and age.
It's tough, man, it's tough. You have to, and you have to be a coach to me who, when I hear that story, what I think about is I go back to like how I was parented, how my parents raised me. And you're gonna have to go and get those athletes whose parents raised them a certain way. And I think like you have coaches, like I talked to like a Coach Harbaugh, when you look at his team, and we'll probably talk about Michigan later, but he's one of those old school coaches too. But when he recruits, he says, I'm recruiting the parents. Mm-hmm. I'm recruiting the kids whose parents have brought them up a certain way. So like you said, there are all these guys, listen, man, they got 7-on-7, 7-on-7 runs like little league and high school football. Nah, you know what I mean? And these parents now, they travel with the kids. You talk about entitlement. That's where all that comes from. But when you have those kids that got that solid foundation that don't come in as entitled and they want to, you know, they want to learn, they want the discipline, they want the structure, they're not guys who are saying, listen, man, I just want to go to like, you know, a Power Five school and then get to the league. You know what I mean? Yeah. When they come in there with that mentality, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
You're going to have a problem.
Because they're ready to hit that portal just as fast as they touch a campus.
Shit, I'm trying to tell you. They don't even want to compete no more. They don't want to compete.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
They run from it.
Run from competition.
Yeah.
They want it easy. Like, listen, when I was in Michigan, and I don't know if you know my story, but I at one point wanted to transfer, right? Because I switched from running back in high school, I was a tailback, right, you know, and played safety. So I go to Michigan, and you get the first 3 days, freshmen by themselves, just so you can get acclimated. And so long story short, first day I played defensive back, second day I played running back, third day I played wide receiver. They wanted me to switch to wide receiver because we had three wide receivers who were upperclassmen, John Colasar, Greg McMurtry, and Chris Callaway. I said, cool, coach, I'll go play receiver, cool. But, you know, it had its challenges. So because I struggled with like, because Michigan ran the ball a lot, you know what I mean? So you just out there blocking a lot. I was like, shit, you know, this ain't for me. But I had struggled, me and Cam Cameron, wide receiver coach, got into it, and I'm telling my man, I want to.
Cam coached me 1-15 with the Dolphins.
Oh, you said, okay, yeah, me and Cam got into it.
Like... I know he ain't teach you shit.
he go on Cam Cameron every time.
Are you like, serious?
If you say that name, you're going to get the same response.
Are you serious?
So you know it's real. This
first it's game crazy. Of the season with Cam, we go to Washington.
Go ahead,
and
brother.
And we playing, there was the Commanders, but it was the Redskins back then.
Yeah.
We go to overtime.
Yeah.
We get the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Kick the ball to us, we get 3 and out. Boom, boom, boom. Punt the ball to them, they drive the ball down our throat, score a touchdown to win the game.
Yeah.
Or kick a field goal, get in the red zone, kick a field goal to win the game. He walk in the room. This is the first game of the season now. This is the new regime.
Right.
This is right after Saban. So we looking at the ground like, boy, we about to get our ass cussed out.
Yeah.
Everybody looking at the ground. We upset that we done, you know, squandered this away.
Yeah.
He walk in smiling. Fellas, from the outside looking in,
That was a hell of a football game to watch.
Yes. Bitch, you are on the inside. What are you talking about?
And that went on to be 0-12. We ended up winning the 13th game and then won a 15th season. Yeah, man, Cam wasn't ready for that, responsibility of being a head coach.
I didn't want to open up that old wound by mentioning Cam's name, bro. I'm just trying to tell you.
I was going
to
let it go until they pointed at
me.
I
was like, exactly. So anyway, so I wanted to transfer. I talked to this dude, my guy Greg Harden. And he was like, man, what makes you think the grass gonna be greener on the other side? What makes you think you can go to this school and they're gonna treat you a different way? So he just helped me change my perspective, change my outlook, my mindset, you know, and then the rest was history. But these kids, bro, they just like wanna hop in the portal so quick. And, you know, they'll do it 2 or 3 times now. It's ridiculous. So yeah, they run away from competition.
It is super wild card weekend. And our partners over at DraftKings have a deal for you. Any new customer signing up right now on DraftKings, you make a $5 bet, you get $200 instantly in bonus bets, but only if you use the promo code PIVOT. What are you gonna spend those $200 on? You're gonna just combine bets, whether it's overs, unders, wins, losses in the same game parlay, and y'all know how much Channing loves those. Make multiple bets and only extend your money. If sports betting is not in your area, you can sign up for DraftKings Daily Fantasy. There's still a way for you to get involved. Now remember, get out your mobile devices, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Any new customer signing up with the promo code PIVOT, you make a $5 bet, instantly get $200 in bonus bets.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Speaking of not transferring, it's a good thing you didn't because you win the Heisman.
Yes, sir.
Which has now become largely a quarterback award.
Yeah.
So when a wide receiver can win it, a running back can win it, Charles, a defensive back can win it, you have to have one of those years that are beyond exceptional, which you
did.
You're from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Everybody knows what happens when you get together with Ohio State.
Yes, sir.
Bro, the punt return.
Yes, sir.
The pose that has now become, it's now become the signature celebration of anyone who believes they've done enough to be in that conversation.
Absolutely. Yes.
Just talk about, bro, what that year was like for you. And when did you start to know, like, hold on, this could be something different than just an All-American year, just a Maxwell year. I can win the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, you know. So I come into that season, and there was a quarterback named David Klingler, right, from Houston.
Yeah. Yep.
And they had him on the cover of Sports Illustrated with a bundle of dynamite saying, like, he's going to win the Heisman. He's the next Heisman Trophy winner, right? Because I believe Andre Ware had just won it from Houston as the quarterback, too. So, like, this guy's the next dude. So we opened up the season up against Boston College on the road. So we're in Boston College, and you guys know a guy named Derek Alexander played wide receiver.
Yeah.
So DA was on the opposite side of me, and DA was a physical freak, like ridiculous. We're in the game against Boston College. DA tears his ACL, right? So I'm like, shit, this is fucked up. That's my guy, you know? So long story short, I scored 4 touchdowns. I caught 3, and I took a kickoff to the house.
Yeah. Oh.
So I had 4 touchdowns that game against Boston College. It was like, yeah, Howard's a good player. The following week, we played Notre Dame in Ann Arbor. ABC, nationally televised game. I scored on the reverse. We had the lead, but they were within striking distance. 4th and inches. Gary Moeller, the head coach, calls a timeout. He calls us to the sideline. He's like, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to throw a hitch to Desmond, okay? If they do some type of funky coverage, check to the run, Elvis. Elvis Gerback's the quarterback. So we like, good. So I'm the long receiver. I'm the flanker to the right. He looks at me. I look at him. The play is on. He snaps the ball. They rotate the coverage up. So the safety comes over the top. The cornerback comes up into my nose. You know what I mean? He comes to press me at the snap. So now Elvis and I, because we're on the same page, my conversion is a fade. Mm-hmm. So you see Elvis, he's about to throw the hitch. He sees me convert to the fade. He pulls it back down, cocks it, and throws the fade in the back of the end zone. And I put my head down, I locate the ball, and then I catch it. Like, I lay out, horizontal, catch it vertical, fourth and inches.
They show that all the time.
Boom, yeah, that one. Next thing I know, I'm on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I scored 2 touchdowns against Notre Dame. I scored 4 against Boston College. I'm just a good player.
Yeah.
I scored 2 against Notre Dame, damn it. I'm on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
You fold it out, you got the layout, catch, you know what I'm saying?
It was that moment,
yeah,
though, Dad.
Exactly.
It's the moment.
Definitely. And that's why I try to tell people. It's not just what you do, it's who you do it against, right, and when you do it. Every guys can put up big stats, but who'd you do it against? Mm-hmm. How relevant was it? You see what I'm saying? Yo, this was 4th and inches against Notre Dame on national TV. Yeah. They converted the damn coverage to a 2 deep. You know what I'm saying? Well, it looked like a 1. And we, yeah, so anyway, so that's how it starts. So at that point, people were like, okay, yeah, it's 21 out there in Michigan. He's pretty good. And it just kept going, but it was cool. You know, I scored and everything. And I would always just hand the ball to the official because I do the Barry Sanders, you know what I mean? Because in Michigan, it's the team, the team, the team.
Right.
So I'll hand it to the official, celebrate with my guys, right? Now, the last game of the season, we call it the game, like you mentioned earlier, it's Ohio State. I'm born and raised in Cleveland, Ohio. You know, my dad drives up every home game from Cleveland, every home game. We get off the bus, I always see him right there, riding these little stairs, right? So we got Ohio State. Bruh, and you know this better than anybody because you played DB. They came in there with a game plan. Like, no matter what happens,
he ain't
not letting
this
Howard score.
Hell yeah.
He ain't scoring today. You know what I mean? They playing their safety so back, you thought they was going to return punts. It was ridiculous, bro. And I was so frustrated. So here I am now. It got a big punt in the ball down there near midfield. So I'm putting my heels on the 10 because that's just the rule. Put your heels on the 10. If it's floating over your head, let it go. Bounce the end zone, you'll start at the 20. So I'm like, man. So I'm heels on the 10, balls in the air. I'm like, oh, man, fuck this. So I return. I got to get this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So at that point, I'm committed. You know what I'm saying? I catch the ball, like, I guess on the 7. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, shit, I got to at least get to the 20.
Right.
Yeah, nothing else. I got to get to the 20. I got to. So I make the first wave miss, right? And I'm looking, and there's another guy's coming. And I'm like, shit, I can juke these dudes, right? So I juke these other guys, and I break out to my left, and that's Ohio State sideline.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, Freddie, man, listen, so I was, backstory, I was dating this gymnast.
That's why my eyes just shifted that way.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know who's gonna sit up.
Chatty.
I know who's gonna sit up.
Here's my
I'm
realm.
Dating this gymnast.
Uh-huh.
Whatever you do. They very smart.
Mm-hmm.
Very smart.
Flexible.
Inflexible. Right. And so I had this gymnast during the summer teach me how to do a backflip. Like, word is bond. And I thought it'd be the coolest thing if I ever get out in the open field to like stop at the 1 and do a backflip into the end zone, right?
That's hard.
Yeah. So I'm like, oh, this is my opportunity. So I'm break out to the left. I see the punter. I'm like, shit, am I going to do it? Because he's a non-factor at this point. I'm like, yeah, am I going to do it? Yes, no. And I promise you guys, like, it's like mental Armageddon in my head trying to decide whether I'm going to do it or not. Like, yeah, do it. Nah, don't do it. Yeah, do it. If you do it and you mess up, you're going to be on SportsCenter for the wrong thing. You know what I mean? And so I got to probably inside the 5-yard line, and I was like, I chickened out. I really did. I punked out, bro.
Yeah,
I did.
Wrong with that.
Yeah, I punked out.
Smart move.
Yeah, yeah. But then I crossed the goal line. And I'm like, well, shoot, let me just do this thing. You know what I mean? And I did the little pose.
The little pose.
Yeah.
I had one question coming in here.
Yeah.
It didn't take weeks of preparation, like, to think of that. That was a split second decision right there.
Yeah, it was like playing. I don't even want to call it plan B. It was just spontaneous, because plan A was to do the backflip.
It was so hard, though.
Yeah, I appreciate that,
bro. We in high school. Everybody in high school doing the pose. Yeah. That's 91. I'm, what, a freshman in high school? Everybody doing the pose.
Yeah, man. Bro, it was the most iconic.
Yeah, it was just that whole moment. It really changed college football forever. You know, Pat Peterson, the year he was going crazy down there returning kicks. You know, Jaden Daniels this year gets to the sideline and does it. Like, to do something for you that was spontaneous and now has caught on like that and become almost transcendent, though, it tells you how good of a football player you were, too.
Appreciate that.
You know, don't nobody, everybody ain't gritty in because Justin Jefferson can't play football. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a reason, you know, that people have started to do it. But, you know, you go from that moment. I think your father and you were talking about whether or not to come back to school for education.
Right.
Right. And you get drafted early, which you should have.
Yeah.
But what happens is when pro football doesn't go the way you want it for you? When you get into a receiver room that has a Hall of Famer.
Right.
And Art Monk. A receiver room that has a number two, has a number three.
Exactly.
You know, and all of this promise is now relegated to, wait,
right,
I used to be the man.
Exactly.
And now it's not like that no more.
Yeah, well, I was in a very unusual circumstance because the Super Bowl champs never get a draft pick that high. It just rarely ever happens. You know what I mean? That rarely ever happens. So the Washington Redskins, at that time Redskins, they won the Super Bowl, and they were bringing back all three of their receivers, right? Like you said, they had Art Monk, Gary Clark, and Ricky Sanders, right? And those three were ballers. They were ballers. So they traded up and got in a position to get me. So when you just won the Super Bowl, you're bringing all three receivers back, you know, you're not starting the person you just drafted. You know what I mean? Because you got your guys.
Right.
And so it was like a situation where I held out. So I got to camp late, so it took a while to catch up and everything. But anyway, so it was a situation where I think that they drafted me to, again, almost like Michigan. Like I said, there were three receivers who were upperclassmen, and Bo and your guy Cam, they asked me to, like, you know, learn from these three because they're going to move on, and then I can do my thing the next year. So that's how I took it. You know what I mean? It's not like, well, you got the Heisman Trophy winner, he going to have to make an impact immediately. Mm-hmm. That's not the situation, because those three guys were back. So Joe Gibbs was the head coach.
Yep.
He used to sleep in his office, man. So there's a lot of pressure on a head coach after you win the Super Bowl to repeat. And I think he fell victim to that pressure. He used to sleep in the football building, and he just became really stressed. And we just didn't have the season that we thought we would have. You know, and then he retired after that year. So then he retired, and Richie Pettibone, who was a defensive coordinator, became the head coach. Well, he was like defense oriented, so then he brought in like, I forget who he has, the OC, but things didn't work out. Like, things just kept going downhill, you know what I mean? And then after that, they brought in North Turner.
Yeah.
And then North Turner became the head coach. Now, he's an offensive-minded coach. And so from a receiver standpoint, I was opposite Henry Ellard. And Henry Ellard taught me a lot. I like Henry, man. Henry was a hell of a receiver. And then Ernest Givens was the guy who I hooked up with in Jacksonville, right? And things got better, but not to the point where it's like, okay, well, we're going to stay here. So I was made available for the expansion draft, and I went to Jacksonville. And then that's when I was playing with Ernest Givens. And but Coughlin was the head coach.
Freddie T guy.
Woo wee. Hey. You got a Coughlin story?
Shit, too many. TC didn't fuck around. That same cloth you talking about, Saban, Belichick, Tuna, all those boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Same story. He was at BC probably when
he was. Well, exactly. I was about to say that. We played him at BC. He was the coach there. So yeah, so anyway, so I got to Jacksonville, and Coughlin. He came at that point with that college mentality. It's probably like how Saban came to Miami, you know what I mean? And it just didn't work. So eventually I landed in Green Bay. And in Green Bay, it was like cold as shit, you know? Cold as shit, but they had the pieces in place. So the expectations wasn't to come in there and you got to, like, do this, you got to do that as far as receivers. They had one of the best receivers in the country at that point named Robert Brooks. Mm-hmm. Robert Brooks was a bad boy, you know what I mean? And they had everything. We had Reggie White, Brett. You know. Man, we had Brett. Brett just came out of rehab.
My dog Free.
Bimo Free. Antonio Freeman was my dog, man. Vitex Fight Day. Bimo Free was my cat. Like, we was roommates on the road.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that's yeah. We was roommates. Check this out. I'll tell you a quick story. So we was roommates down in New Orleans for the Super Bowl. And so Free, man, he was snoring, right? He was snoring too loud, bro. I had to call our ops guy. I said, listen, bro, you got to get me out of here. He said, what's that? I said, that's Free. I said, man, if you expect me to go out there and perform in this game, yeah. I got to get some sleep. And I ain't get no sleep. So they moves. I got my own room. But that's my dog, man. Free, I love
almost,
Free.
Free almost messed up, tricked off the Super Bowl.
You know what I'm saying?
MVP was going to be tired. Free exactly, almost tricked bro. Off the Super Bowl.
For real. But yeah, so, and that was like, it was just perfect. It was a perfect fit. You know, we had all the pieces in place. Yeah.
And did you ever think great. VP, though?
No, man, listen, check this out. So the thing about Disney, what they do is they send around a rep, right? And I guess they knock on certain doors and they tell people about the protocol. So I get a knock on my door and this person's like, yeah, you know, I'm representative from Disney. Just want to give you a heads up and tell you the protocol in case you win most valuable player of this game. And so I'm thinking, because Brett was like a prankster. So Brett was like a jokester. So I go to the door, like I go through the door, I'm looking out in the hallway, like where the hell is Brett? Is Brett trying to prank me and shit? Like, cause I'm on the field with, bro, we got, like I said, we got Bad Moon Rising. We got Keith Jackson, the tight end. We got Reggie White. We got Brett Favre, Edgar Bennett. I mean, Dorsey Levins. I can go on and on. I'm like, bro, I'm just trying to do my thing. You know what I mean? But she was, the rep was for real. She was like, no, for real. I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. I'm flattered by it. Right. But I never imagined that I would get MVP. But I was always told to be a star in your role and do what you can to help your team succeed. No matter how, you know, insignificant you might think your role is, it gains significance if you do it great. You know what I mean? So my thing was, I got Brett Favre, who just got out of rehab. And the national media was killing him because they was like, oh, is he a drunk? Is he alcohol? You know what I'm saying? So at that point, we circled the wagons because that was our quarterback. That's our guy. You got Reggie White, accomplished everything you can imagine in pro football, right? Everything.
Yeah.
But he didn't have that ring.
Right.
So I'm like, I want to get Reggie a ring because Reggie was a guy, when I was in Green Bay, I had an injury. When I was on the bubble because I couldn't practice in fall camp. And I didn't play like the first three preseason games. So I was on the bubble, you know what I mean? And Reggie was a guy who I, you know, went to for a consultation. He consulted me and he was like, you know, Dez, Reggie said, you gotta pray.
Yeah.
You gotta pray, remain, you know, have faith. And I said, man, so now I'm in the position now. I made the team obviously, but now I'm like, damn, bro, whatever I do today, I gotta help this man get a ring. You know what I'm saying? I love Reggie, you know what I mean? And so I was just out there trying to do my best, man. And shit, you know, it ended up pretty damn good for me that night.
Your best has led you to be the only special teams player in the history of the game to win Super Bowl MVP, which is crazy. You have so many accomplishments. You got the Heisman Trophy, Dope Walker. I mean, we can name a million others. What's been your biggest? I mean, everything in general.
I don't know if they can see that. But that MVP, because listen, anybody who plays football, that's the ultimate goal, is to get to the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
That is the ultimate goal. It gets no bigger in our sport than that, right? So to get there and then to win the MVP, I mean, it was like done.
Right.
Done. You know what I'm saying? That's the biggest one. But because I do college football for a living, everyone always associates me with the Heisman.
Yep.
Yep. It's almost like the Super Bowl MVP is an afterthought, you know, but that one is like, yeah, that's that joint, you know what I mean? Yeah.
And then talking to you, it reminds me of when we sat down with Devin Hester, because
Devin's
as athletic,
bad dude, bro.
Bad dude. So I was going to say, I don't know if it's 1-2-2-1, Devin, whatever y'all want to say as returners.
Devin's
y'all
bad dude, bro.
Y'all some bad men when that ball going there and y'all catch it.
Yeah.
And
I asked him, and he said, and his answer was no, but do you believe you were maximized on the field outside of special teams? Because if you look at the stat, I don't think you had 7 receiving touchdowns in 11 years. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You that damn bad with the ball in your hand.
Yeah.
Do you think the coaches or people maximized your ability on offense?
Right.
Knowing that you was just a returner, just a specialist? Because Devin felt as if he doesn't think he was maximized on either side of the ball.
I wouldn't say I was maximized, but I have no regrets on my career, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would think that I could have been used differently and used more and even better, but I don't want to say that for somebody to think I have any regrets. You know what I mean? Because to play 11 years in the sport that we play and to make the amount of money that I made doing that, I mean, I can't frown upon anything that happened in my career, you know? So I'm very blessed in what happened, and I didn't take as many hits as those other cats.
Dan still got a lot of sense. What he trying to say?
Yeah,
he still got a lot of sense.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I look at that, I'm like, you know, hey, God has a plan for all of us, right?
Yeah.
And that was the plan he had for me. So I maximized that, my ability, based on the plan he had for me. For
sure. You know, Dez, you have a ton of trophies here. You got a Heisman, obviously. Super Bowl MVP, which you say is, you know, the pinnacle. Obviously, the game is the pinnacle of our game.
Absolutely.
But Super Bowl, to be considered the most valuable player of it, that one singular individual, I think that's bigger than anything. Like, people talk about winning the championship. Hell, you got the championship.
Yeah.
Now it's, okay, what I did in this game changed the direction of the way things were going. You had Emmys.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, and, quite a few.
And and now you don't. For people who don't understand, when a show wins an Emmy, the on-air talent doesn't necessarily get a trophy.
Right.
And what ESPN did, Lee Fitting, who is no longer with the company, not to besmirch his name, he used other names, which would allow them to get extra trophies. So on-air talent could get one, which I think on-air talent deserves if the show is that good.
Right.
Kind of take us through how it happens, man. Do they walk in here like a drug raid and like take everything? Like, how does, what's the process of getting your actual trophy taken from you?
Brother, so I get a phone call from an exec, right? And they're saying that, you know, there's some type of, rule with the sports Emmys or what have you, that the talent, I guess, isn't supposed to get Emmy. Now, this is the first I've ever heard of this. Like, it made zero sense. Like, who should get it then? You know what I mean? Like, how, the show is not the show without the on-air talent.
Wow.
But, okay, so they said, well, there's gonna be a person who's gonna contact you, and they're gonna come to the house and collect the Emmys, right? And I had quite a few of them, quite a few. And so I tell my wife, and she's like beside herself about it. I'm like, nah, this is like real. And so I get contacted by an attorney who said they need to come and, you know, collect the Emmys. And at first I'm defiant. You know, I'm like, man, I ain't giving them no damn Emmys. You kidding me? We earned them shits. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then what really, I'm gonna tell y'all, fucked me up is that my man said, we got somebody at Corso's house getting his right now.
That's foul.
Completely. I said, wifey, they taking that old man's Emmys. If they gonna take his, you can have all mine. I'll break these damn things.
Yeah.
You gonna take that man's Emmys? I said, how could y'all even let this happen to him?
Right.
Oh man, I was fucked up over that, bro, for real. I'll break all of them. Take them in pieces. That's how much they mean to me.
Wow.
So yeah, bro, bitter taste in my mouth about that whole situation, bro. I ain't gonna lie. Because I love Corso.
Shoot, everybody does, man. Wow.
And they took his. They should be ashamed of their damn self.
You have to open the gate. Tell them, new phone, who this?
throw a Spanish accent in there, shit.
This is Desmondo.
No Desmond here. Yeah, bro.
Yeah, honestly, man, that's like to go to Lee's house though, to Coach's house though,
come on,
and do that in the sense of like, what does that trophy even do to you?
Yeah.
Or do for you?
Right.
That you have to go take it from him. I agree with you. With you totally. And I think I didn't know that was also part of the Emmy process that on-air talent didn't receive an Emmy until this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I never really thought about it. I was like, hell, I ain't finna win one anyway, so I ain't tripping. You know? And so, like, that was, like, that's, dang, bro, that's tough. And I do want to mention this, too, though. You don't run your life, Des. Your wife runs your life. We've been here an hour, bro. You can't. I was wondering. They always be like, "Hey, man, like I'll be on First Take." You get the rundown. The rundown on First Take says,
"Yeah,
D Block,
yeah,
Stephen A,
yeah,
Molly,
yeah,
Desmond. Ain't no RC on that. I mean, I'm off, right? So I'll be doing the show. I'll go walk in the green room, or if I'm at the house, I try to go to the front, grab some coffee. I get the text message, "Hey, RC, we're not sure if we're gonna have Des be on standby." Now being here and saying that she gotta set your whole setup up for you to even start. Now I get it. You just can't do it. But she did. Yeah. She did pull a fast one on you, Des, because y'all met on a half blind date. I need you to explain to the people what a half blind date is.
Oh yeah. So it's very simple. You know, I was in Washington, so I got drafted by Washington at that point. And, you know, I won the Heisman, so my pictures are everywhere and everything. You know what I mean? People know what I look like. And my guy, Ralph Wiley, you know, may he rest in peace. That was my dude. I love Ralph. Ralph was like, "Yeah, man, so I got this woman who I've been seeing, and she got a sister, you know? We want you to meet her sister." Like, so it's like a blind date, because I don't know what she looks like, you know what I mean? Yeah. But she's in D.C., so she know what I look like, you know what I mean?
She still showed up, though.
She still showed up. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's the half blind date story. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I was like, "I didn't know what you looked like." She's like, "Yeah, but I knew what you looked like, and I still showed up." I'm like, "All right." Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Des,
yeah.
Man, you think about all the things you were able to do in your career, you know, college, NFL. We talked a little bit about some of the things that have been accomplished post-career. What are some of the things, just as a man, that you're most proud of that you've been able to do?
Wow. Well, it seems to always go back to my children, you know what I mean? Like my daughter and my sons, you know, just raising them and seeing who they're becoming, you know what I mean? That's probably one of my greatest accomplishments. And my parenting style is always want to be like supportive. So I was listening to Mike Tyson. Like Mike Tyson's my dude, right? Like when I was in high school, like I met Mike Tyson. I've known Mike Tyson since high school.
Yeah.
And so Mike was doing a podcast, and he said that he has a daughter that loves tennis. And so he was talking to this tennis coach who I think at some point coached the Williams sisters. And this guy had a podcast, and he's talking about, so Mike's like, "Yeah, well, you know, when I go to tennis practice," he's like, "you know, I don't say anything." He said, my thing is to show my daughter that I'm there to support her and to make sure she feels secure. And that's my whole philosophy. Like, I just want to make sure you feel secure and you feel supported. And then the rest is just, you know, you go do what you got to do. So I never, even when I'm at practices, I never say anything. You guys ever go to practice? Y'all say anything at y'all kids' practice? No matter what the sport is?
I don't.
Yeah, see, I don't either.
I argue at the other parents.
You argue other, you say?
Yeah, games are games.
Yeah,
I fight with the other parents.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, it's just fun for me, sport.
Yeah.
I'm a sit in the corner, don't talk to anybody. Like, I speak to everybody.
Right.
I speak to everybody. I'm also nervous at every sporting event.
Yeah.
Especially football, so I can't talk.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not, like, they were at Colorado ASU this year.
Yeah.
And I just sit outside.
You're like, damn, I see you ain't playing no more.
Yeah.
Hey, I wasn't nervous when I was playing. I could do something about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm at practice. Like, I don't say anything because, you know, it could be intimidating.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
You Desmond Howard. Still.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Fred, you Ryan. You know what I mean? Chad. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it could be intimidating. So I never say anything. I just observe. And then, like, when they get in the car, then I talk to them about things I saw. You know what I mean? Things I may want them to do differently or better. But that's probably, like my greatest, you know, probably accomplishment is like, because I tell you, like, my daughter, man, like, I would go places and people say, hey, man, Sydney's the greatest, man. I just love working with Sydney. She's so smart. She's so sweet, but she's just great to work with. And it would come unsolicited. Like, I was at a Ravens game talking to some people, and like people like in the, like, the front office would just come to me and just talk about. So when people like compliment you on your child or your children and it's unsolicited, just voluntarily come up to you and say, hey man, I tell you what, like we go to like to anywhere, like to the school, and like I have a teacher say, I don't even have your son in my class, but he's such a wonderful young man. He's such a great kid. You know what I mean? Like that charges me, that energizes, it fuels me. Now, I absolutely love that.
Your daughter, she graduated from Michigan, right?
Yeah.
And she also recently graduated from Columbia Business.
Correct. Yeah, she got an MBA. Yeah.
On that post, you said Columbia was the number one school in the world.
Correct.
So you pretty much just said Michigan ain't number one.
Number one business school. which is tough because Michigan has a business school, which is the Ross Business School, which is my guy. He owns the Dolphins, but yeah, I gotta give it up to Columbia, bro. Yeah, at that point.
We gotta be a sucker for our daughters.
Got to.
Regardless.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Regardless of the fact.
Exactly.
Love it.
To me, she got the brains, you know what I mean?
And Diz, I gotta say, man, years ago, first time I ever met you, you knew my name.
Yeah.
And it got to me.
We did the radio show.
Yeah. And when you walked up and like, you really was like, Channing, man, what's going on? And I was like, damn, you know me. Not really. But even from there, like seeing you around, seeing you different places, do you know you're supposed to be arrogant? Honestly, bro, you're a Heisman Trophy. Like, you're the best college football player when you play college football.
Yeah.
You were the best player in the biggest football game that could ever exist.
Yeah.
Now, what you're doing with TV, like, your invisible Emmys up there.
It's invisible.
Yeah.
But, like, it's just their aura. Yeah, I see the lights that was on them.
But like, you just use your imagination.
I see the gold, you know. I'm with you, baby. You got them. But, like, you succeed at.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be arrogant. You're supposed to not be as cool as you are. Like,
he cool as hell too.
Man, just cool as shit. We just sit around the bullshit. Like,
he cool as hell.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Why?
Yeah, but I think just the way my, I guess the way my dad, because you know, after my parents divorced, my dad was like, you know, my guy, and you know, just the way I was raised by my parents, but especially my dad in those formidable years. And I had great mentors too, though. You know what I mean? Had great mentors. And to be honest with you guys, I understand the struggle of our people since we've been here in this country. And I feel like, I always felt like I needed to represent that in the best way possible. And so to represent that in the best way possible, you have to be, you know, humble. You have to be sharp. You seek wisdom, you know. And I think that's what keeps me grounded, so to speak, because I know that I have that. That's my foundation. I know that background. And I don't want to embarrass those people who poured themselves into me for me to become the young man that I became and the father and the man that I am now. So it's a combination of all of those things, you know, play a huge role in, I guess, why I am the way I am today. You know what I mean? Yeah. And you know, like all of us though, we have a switch, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a switch. That's why we played that sport we played. Yeah.
It's like, but like when you talk to Dez, he's so dang jolly. It's like, I don't even know how Dez turned up. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, you know how they tell how D1 said, I don't look like what I've been through? Dez don't look like what he's been through. You know what I'm saying? Just happy. Nice, pleasant, as you always say.
Very pleasant. Very pleasant.
Right, man. Right. You finally, I like that word.
Yeah, man, you finally get a break, bro.
Yeah, man.
No college football this weekend. Your team's number one. Mm-hmm. But your Packers.
Yeah.
Do play what our producer does feel like is America's team.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. That's true.
You know, we got Jordan Love, you got Dak. Do you still, when you get time, do you still watch NFL football and stay into it?
Absolutely. I love it, man. I love it. Like, I don't watch it like you guys watch it because you have to, you know, TV about it. So it's more entertainment for me, you know what I mean? But I appreciate it. You know, there's a lot of guys who obviously I covered in college, mm-hmm. and you kind of want to follow their pro career, see how they're doing. So I love that. Now, your producer calls Dallas America's team. Now, Dallas was my favorite team growing up.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sorry, bro. I'm sorry. RC, I was Dorsett. Like, I was totally Dorsett. Yeah.
The state of Ohio got problems with you. Yeah. No dog pound.
Right. I know, exactly.
Come on.
Yeah, bro, I know. They were my number two team. Brian Sipe, you know what I mean? Ernest Byner, Kevin Mack, Ozzie Newsome, you know what I mean? Yeah, I go Cleveland. Webster Slaughter, you know what I'm saying? But
Cleveland did have squads.
Yeah, for sure. We had some dudes, man, until Elway came in there and broke our hearts. That was that was brutal, bro. That was brutal. And then EB fumbled the ball.
Yeah, the fumble.
Like, ooh. Yeah, it was crucial. But I had Tony Dorsett, Robert Newhouse, Roger Staubach, Tony Hill, Drew Pearson, Ed Tuttle Jones, Harvey Martin, Cliff Waters. Man. You know what I mean? I can go down the line, bro. Yeah.
So can the new squad win it?
I don't know if I have that type of confidence in Dak. I really, not in the postseason. I need to see it. I really do need to see it. Like, you have these guys, they're great in the regular season, but postseason's a different monster, like you guys know. You know what I mean? And so, I got to see it from Dak, bro. I'm not sure he can get it done.
I think it's a different Dak. Hmm? I know you want to see it, but I think it's a different Dak. He hasn't had a season like he's having now.
Yeah, yeah.
But you said it, postseason.
Postseason,
I think he's going to be ready.
Yeah. The same one that averaged 15 points.
I think he's going to be ready, Tim.
Yeah.
Okay, same dude, isn't it? You know.
I think I'm with you.
Dak can play ball, but getting the postseason, he's going to see the 49ers sooner or later.
We've
seen that back-to-back years.
Exactly.
I do have a question for you, though, mentioning guys that you cover, and this just popped in my head. C.J. Stroud.
Yeah.
Right. I know you followed him closely. One, absolutely, because Ohio State is Ohio State.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was one of the top players in the country, being a Heisman finalist twice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Could you ever have imagined he would be this good this early?
I thought that C.J. Stroud had the best opportunity to be successful in the NFL as a quarterback from Ohio State, because they've never had a quarterback that's been successful in the NFL, like never, you know what I mean? And you look at Justin Fields, and I'm saying, but Justin's like more of an athlete than he is quarterback. CJ's a quarterback. So I thought he had the best opportunity. Now, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't think I would see this level of success this quickly, but I thought that he would be the most successful one to come out of Ohio State, just because when I did, you know, we do the draft, we start talking to scouts, start talking to GMs and stuff like that. And I'm like, I just want them to confirm what I see. Mm-hmm. So they were like, yeah. They said, Desmond, one of the things you see about like some of these young quarterbacks, they get pressure and they get what they call noisy feet. Guys like, he has quiet feet. Mm-hmm. Like, he's calm. I said, okay, because this is what I see. You know, he's a quarterback. He's not like the athlete that Justin Fields is. So if you don't have that type of athleticism, then you got to figure it out up here.
Yeah.
You got to figure it out up here, because you can't use your legs to escape. You know what I mean? And he figures it out, and he can throw. I mean, he can obviously throw over. So I thought he would be the most successful Buckeye quarterback that we would ever see in the NFL, at least up to this point. But I'm not going to lie. Like, what he's been doing, wow, bro. It's ridiculous. Yeah, and he got Nico. And they got like this little
Tank.
Great. Yeah.
And they got your number two team.
Yeah, yeah.
This week. They got Cleveland. So,
oh, it's gonna be
and with that defense,
yeah.
In Houston, I think it's different. Yeah. I mean, to end, we ask everybody this question, Dez. Okay. I told Freddie T yesterday. Freddie T came up with this question when he came up with, I always say, because he came up with the name. I wasn't part of that. They just threw the name out there, and I was like, okay, works for me.
All right.
But he came up with it. So the question is this, Dez.
Okay.
The question is, what is your biggest pivot in life? And I always try to explain it as it doesn't have to be just a decision you made to do something different. It can be an event. It could be something negative. It could be something positive. But what is something in your life that had to occur in order for Desmond Howard to be a Heisman Trophy winner, a Super Bowl MVP, a great father, a great husband? What happened in your life? What was that moment or what was that event? What was that conversation that helped you get to this point?
Earlier, I talked about like knowing our history, right? Knowing the history of like our sojourn in America, right? And because I was like a voracious reader when I was in high school and college, I came across some literature by a guy named Dr. Harry Edwards. And Dr. Harry Edwards came and spoke to the freshman football team when I got to Michigan. And he was instrumental in the 68 Olympic protest with John Carlos and Tommy Smith. So he came to speak to us as I was going through my thing. Like I told you earlier, I thought about transferring out of Michigan. He spoke to us as freshmen. I had spring break. And during spring break, my brother lived in California. At this point, Dr. Edwards was a professor at Cal. So I told my brother, I said, I need to go see this man. I need to go talk to him. And he had one of his friends drive me to Cal. And we know how this thing works as far as like office hours and everything. So I go to the sociology department. I said, can I see Dr. Harry Edwards' office hours? They show me his office hours. I mean, they don't know. To them, I'm a student. You know what I mean? They don't know. I said, okay, where's his office? They pointed down the hallway. So I went down the hallway with my brother's friend, Cole. And we just sat down on the floor, bro, by his office, right? And I don't know if you've ever seen Doc Edwards, but Doc Edwards is 6'8".
Gosh.
6'8", complete bald head, big beard, and always wear these shades, always wear these sunglasses, right? So he's an intimidating figure. And he comes walking down the corridor. And he just, like, he's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm nervous as hell, bro. You know, I'm like, and he has this real deep voice. He's like, hey, can I help you? I said, Doc Edwards, you don't know me, but my name is Desmond Howard. And I go to the University of Michigan, and you spoke to my incoming freshman class. And I just wanted to see if I can get like just like 5 or 10 minutes with you, because, you know, I'm just trying to figure my way out in this at this university. And I just wanted to talk to you. Bruh, he must have given me like 40 minutes, 45 minutes. And then he, you know, he's like, Doc Edwards is brilliant. Like, he's brilliant. And he gave me a book, and it's called The Struggle That Must Be. And it's in my office. He signed it for me. And I've always kept that book. And I think that was my pivot. Like, because it just took a lot just to go there, you know, on a whim. I didn't know if I was going to speak to him, and I didn't know if he was going to meet with me or not. But I took a chance. I took that pivot, met with him. And we've been tight, you know, ever since. Like, he's a guy who I can hit on the phone and get advice from. And yeah, that was my pivot, bro. Yeah, and I got the book. Man. Yeah, Dr. Harry Edwards, man.
My guy. The Struggle That Must Be.
The Struggle That Must Be, yeah. And the other guy was Greg Harden, who I talked about too, who was actually the guy who said, yeah, what makes you think if you go to this school, the grass gonna be greener over there, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was up on the faculty at Michigan, like, yeah. So anyway, so yeah, that's my pivot though. Yeah, I'll show you the book too.
Nah, man, I love that. Yeah, appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, appreciate
that
you guys,
awesome,
man.
Hey, you, damn, you had me my feelings about Coach now.
Boy,
hey, you had my feelings about Coach.
You,
bro, that's crazy.
You
man.
Know what I'm saying?
Man, that's the face of college football.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The face.
They take
mine in pieces.
Now, give me a wrench. I'm gonna start breaking the wings off this joint or something.
Hold up. Limitless, niggas to me, cap pinning it. I thought they here to witness it.
Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up. On a mission, get me up. Knowing me, I got the key. On the vision, I can trust. Trust. Limitless. Niggas send me cap in it. I fought the head to witness it. Got my people feeling militant. Way I'm feeling, get me up.